So what's in a name? I'm LJ. That means a lot of things. There's a name that I was given when I was a kid that contained all of the stories of my mother, all of the people she was around at the time, everything she hoped for and envisioned I might be. It contains a story of the culture where I grew up. All the kids and teachers who said that name is too big and long and complicated, and how do you pronounce it? The people who said, what else can we call you? And all the other nicknames I got. Now that we're family, I'll tell you the secret nickname that no one else can know. But growing up, everybody called me Bean. And then LJ was the name that my high school friends gave me because I was cool, and that seemed like a cool name. So there's so much in a name, so many histories. And so what's First Baptist Church of Ann Arbor mean? What are all the histories that each and every one of us have brought to this First Baptist Church of Ann Arbor? What are all the histories that other people brought to it? What are all the things we think First Baptist Church of Ann Arbor is? What are all the things we think and hope and worry First Baptist Church of Ann Arbor might be? So that's the question for today. This is indeed a day of new beginnings as well. And so I'm not gonna bury the lead because it's hot, right? I'm gonna actually start with the conclusion and then come back to it again at the end because, wow. So I'm gonna propose that this should be a new beginning when we set the intention to lean into each other, to ask each other what all these stories are, to not wait for each other to offer up the stories, but to say, who are you? What does your name mean? What does First Baptist Church of Ann Arbor mean to you? Or alternatively, would you like to hear a story? Can I tell you the story of my name? Can I tell you the story of what First Baptist Church of Ann Arbor has meant, does mean, and will mean to me? And so I wanted to have a text that spoke to all these things. Someone who wrestled with their identity, someone who wrestled with the vocation and responsibility that God had given them, and someone who had to live into new beginnings with all the uncertainties that those can bring. And so we have our forefather Jacob. Specifically, we're using a section that includes this really short, beautiful, kind of enigmatic, poetic section. And it comes halfway through his life story. And he's dealing with a lot. And then on top of all that, he's laying there in the middle of the night, and in the pitch black, somebody comes up to him and is like, get up. And they start wrestling. And then on top of all that, says, oh, by the way, with everything else you've got going on and you just got no sleep, here's a new name. Good luck. It comes with a whole new responsibility and vocation on top of the, like, thousands of livestock, 11 children, 2 wives, 2 mothers of your children that you already have to deal with, right? That's a lot. And that felt poignant. We've had a lot going on as a church. Folk have had a lot going on as individuals. And now on top of that, here we are. Just us. In the uncertainty together. And yet, just like God had prepared Jacob for everything that was going to happen to him, God has prepared each of us to be here too. God has curated this congregation. You're not here by chance. You're here because God's put you here. Because you have something that we need, and we have something that you need. We have been put together as a family for a reason, for just a time such as this. So if I were really nice, that would be the end of the sermon, but it's not, because we got to do a little exegesis, because you can't bring a nerd up here and not do a little exegesis. So we're going to go to the text now and then come right back to that conclusion. It's a fun method, isn't it? So, Jacob. Not a Hebrew scholar, by the way, so forgive me there, but I do love some words. So, Jacob's name is a play on quite a lot of words. But one of them is Akev, which is the word in other texts, means heel, footprint, a step that you take in a direction, right? It can also mean to sort of stay, as in to like stay a judgment, or to like restrain a person. And it can also mean to deal craftily. And the last thing it means, there's one other time that this word is used in Joshua, and in that text, it refers to the rear guard, or for a football analogy, the safety. It's like the person in the back who's gotta catch him if nobody else does. And in this story, specifically even in this paragraph that I read, each one of those meanings comes out. So the wordplay in this little paragraph is incredible. And it's dense, and it's poetic. And it's like the writers of this time and place wanted to put what the kids these days would call a TLDR. In the olden days, we called it like the executive summary or the long story short, right? But the kids these days say too long, didn't read, right? Something like that, the TLDR. And so that's what this little paragraph is. Every word is so dense and knit together so poetically. It's the TLDR for Jacob's life. So that's a side note, just coming back. So we pick up this little TLDR section, and it summarizes all the previous 7 chapters of Jacob's life, and then he gets this new name, and it gives us a hint of all that's to come. Right? It also does the work of connecting him back to previous generations. So there's a lot happening in this little paragraph. So what's happened in the previous 7 chapters? Right? He struggles with his brother. He struggles with this idea of inheritance and unearned privilege. His parents sent him out with a blessing to go and like find a family, find a career, and then when you're set, come back and take care of us here. And then he goes and he gets into a struggle with his father-in-law and all kinds of those interests. And then him and his wife struggle with infertility. And it's just a struggle after struggle after struggle. And then after all that, after 20 years, he finally gets his career and family established. He's got 11 kids, he's got 2 wives, he also has 2 mothers of his children, he has thousands, perhaps, of goats and sheep and cows that are all this unique heirloom breed that he made. So he's become like quite the livestock maker. And he says, okay, now it's time for us to go back out west to my house, my parents' house, and start taking over the family business, start taking care of my mom, start taking care of my brother. So he gets about part of the way there, and he remembers a kink in his plan. That when he had left home with his parents' blessings, his brother was mad jealous. And said, the next time I see him, I'm going to kill him. And so Jacob just remembers, oh, wait, 20 years ago, my big brother said, the next time I see him, I'm going to kill him. On the one hand, that was 20 years ago. So we're hoping a brother's not petty. On the other hand, people can be petty. And at this point, there's a lot more at risk than just Jacob. He's got a family he's worked hard for, and he's got a family that he is 100% responsible for their well-being and safety. So he can't really risk, right, Jacob coming after him, or I mean Esau coming after him. And while he's grown in faith in the God of Abraham, the God of his grandfather, he's still cautious. Because he holds the weight of his responsibility, his vocation to his family very heavily. And so he prays for the first time to God. He's to the God of Abraham. He's like, hey, I know you're out there. Appreciate you, God of my grandfather. Also, I'm a little worried about Esau. And I'm like genuinely worried about the well-being of all my people. So no offense to you, still believe in you and this thing you've called me to, but also I think I need to do what I need to do to feel that I'm protecting my family. And so that is where I started reading today. He says, okay, I'm going to break everybody up into waves and sections, and I'm going to send one wave at a time to Esau and see what happens. And I'm going to have them really butter him up. And they're going to say, oh, hey, Esau, big brother, we've heard so much about you. Jacob sent us as a gift and an offering because he loves you so much. And by the way, he's right back there. And he sends wave, second wave, a third wave, and a fourth wave, lots of buffers. And then Jacob and his nuclear family are right here. One more side note. Nuclear family. We hear a lot sometimes in social and political worlds about how we need to return to the traditional family. We need to return to the traditional Judeo-Christian family. This is the traditional Judeo-Christian family. 11 kids, 2 wives, 2 mothers of your children who gave birth sitting on the laps of your wives. Hundreds of sheep, goats, and cows. So, good luck with your traditional families. That's the end of that side note, and I'm coming back to the text. So, Jacob says, I'm going to protect my nuclear family. I'm going to keep them in the back of all these waves. So, either Esau is going to accept all these gifts, and he's going to love and forgive me, or something bad is going to happen to those people, and I hate that, but at least it wasn't my nuclear family. So this is the gamble he makes. And in the text that we read, he even starts to feel unsteady about that plan. And he says, okay, you know what? Actually, I'm going to put my nuclear family on the other side of this river so that if Esau gets through me, God forbid, he still has to cross a river, and then maybe my little nuclear family still has a chance to get away. So he makes all the contingency plans. And so now Jacob's left. One of the things I want to point out back in the wordplay that I was talking about, you know, I mentioned that one time in Joshua, the word that's related to Jacob's name refers to the rear guard or the safety. And so in this way, Jacob is still living up to his name, right? He's creating the rear guard. He's creating the safeties. So it's another part of that wordplay. But anyway, so back to the imagery of it all. So his family's back here safely on the other side of the river. Several waves of people are ahead of him. And he's like, okay, now I'm ready for whatever comes. I've done what I can to protect my family. At this point, the consequences of my actions are my own. And so he lays on the side of the riverbank. No tent, nothing covering him, just out there. And this is a symbol of his incredible bravery. But also his integrity. His saying, like, I am not afraid of whatever comes. Because this is the life to which I've been called. These are the actions I've taken. It is what it is. This is who I am. And so he lays there on the side of the bank waiting for Esau to come. So he's laying there, it's pitch black, waiting for his brother to come, accompanied with 400 troops, waiting to hear all the feet coming for him. Or maybe waiting for one of those waves of his people to come. And instead, and all of a sudden somebody grabs him. And so what does he do? Does he start throwing hands and kicking? Nay, he does. The language here is the world's gentlest fight of all time. So it says that Jacob was left alone, and a man came out and wrestled with him until daybreak. That word wrestled, well, I'm not going to call it, I don't want to call it wrestled. First of all, it's a word that only occurs here. So it's sort of uniquely chosen because it actually sounds a little bit like all the other words. So there's the word for Jacob's name, Jacob, right? There's the river, Jabbok, similar, right? There's another root word, Akev, which is very similar to those. And then you have another one here, which sounds very similar to all of those. And so the word choice is there because it connects with all these same sounds in Hebrew. But it also has really interesting meanings. The meaning of this little root word, one of them is like dust. So think about, in English, we talk about a fight being a dust up. You know, the dust that you kind of fight on. So one of the word for wrestled, the root word for it, one of the meanings of it in English is dust. And then the other meaning for that root word is to wrap around or embrace. So this is like a hug and a dust up. You know, they're not throwing hands, they're not being violent. They're just hanging on to each other. Just hanging on. Neither of them, Jacob doesn't know who this is yet. But it feels like something important. He had put himself out here before God in the universe for whatever consequence was to come, and I guess this is part of it. So they're just holding on to each other. There are a lot of paintings in antiquity of this moment. One of them I may or may not have right here on my arm. So there's a lot of paintings in antiquity of the wrestling match between Jacob and this man. And weirdly, all of them look very romantic. They all look like they're just dancing. Like none of the paintings look like an actual violent fight. And that's what the artists are getting at too. This is not violent. This is just hanging on, maybe even dancing. And so finally, Jacob says to the man, well, the important thing, don't want to skip, is the other gentleness of it. So Jacob's hip. The man doesn't kick or punch his hip to knock it out of place. And if you know anything about hips, hips are the strongest joint in the human body. It would take many, many people to dislocate one person's hip. The man just touches it with one finger, and his hip explodes, right? It dislocates. And that's the moment that Jacob knows, this isn't no man. I am with God right now, because who else could just gesture at my hip and have it come out of place? So he knows in that moment he's wrestling God. And so he says, calls him out. He clocks him, as the kids say, right? I know who this is now. And the God says to him, you know, let me go, it's starting to break day. And Jacob says, absolutely not, I know who you are. I got enough going on. You just added this all-night match on top of it. I'm tired. I'm a little worried about my family. And I'm, like, leaning into this whole new season of life that I'm not sure how it's going to turn out. At least give me a blessing. At least let me know that this is part of your, like, big plan. And God says, okay, yeah, absolutely, right? And so his blessing to Jacob, among other things, is that your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. For you have struggled with God and men and have prevailed. So the sign of God's presence is his hip dislocating, which is pretty brutal. But often the signs of God breaking into our life include things that are hard and hurt and leave us permanently changed. Because those are the moments that we have to wrestle with God. Those are the moments that we have to wrestle with the hard questions. And the other sign of this meeting with God is a name change. I feel like I have to do a little representation here. And another side note, but there's a trans man writer who speaks about this. And he talks about Jacob to Israel being a trans figure. Because God comes to him and says, "This is who you are. This is the name I am giving you. It's different than the name that the world gave you. And yet, it is filled with all of your lineage and all of your ancestors and all of your inheritance and all of my hopes and dreams for you." And that is the experience of trans people. So, side note, not this sermon, but just more side notes. This name that he gives him, Israel, isn't too much different from his name, Jacob. It has a similar theme. The root word of Jacob and the root word of Israel both have this concept of struggle, or holding on, wrestling in them. Israel, the name, the middle, the SR in the middle of it, is related to his grandmother Sarah, the mother of the nations. And so giving him this new name, Israel, is saying, you're still the same person. Still that same tenacious character. Still that same savvy character. You are still the grandchild of Sarah and Abraham. And yet, you are more. You will be the protector of the nations because you have protected your family so well. You will be the provider for the nations because you have provided for your family so well. All of that is coming in this new name of Israel. The last line of it, after God says that your name will be Israel, God says, "For you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed." That word prevailed that we use in English is another one I want to complicate for you. And it's the last one, I promise. And I'm going to go back to the conclusion I started with, and we can get out of here. So, prevailed, the word. So that word in the Hebrew has the same root as Israel and Sarah. And it's this word for struggle that has this sense of being empowered. And so how I want to translate this is say, your name shall no longer be Jacob Israel, for you have danced with God, and you have found your power. And may it be so for us in this season, as a church for each other, as a family for each other. May we dance with God, and may we find our power and our name. I think that's a good ending. You already heard the conclusion once, so we'll stop there. The takeaways that I want you to have in a good Baptist way. When in doubt, when in uncertainty, this season, lead with your gifts, because either way, it's a good idea. It might repair something that needs to be repaired. It shows someone what gifts you have to offer. It shows your spirit of generosity. Whatever your gifts are, Jacob's gift was that he was a savvy businessman. You wouldn't think of that necessarily as a virtuous gift, but he sure used it for good. Whatever it is that comes naturally to you, whoever you are naturally, lead with that. And it's the same assignment that I gave us in the beginning. One of our gifts, one of our essential gifts, is our name and our story. So lead with that with each other. Reach out and say, tell me about your name. Tell me what First Baptist Church means to you. Or, the other way around, would you like to hear a story? The second takeaways are the ones I already said. Uncertainty is sacred ground. Jacob made a lot of contingency plans in the uncertainty. He wanted to make sure his responsibilities were met, but at the end of the day, he faced the uncertainty out in the open, knowing that God would meet him there. And so let's do the same. Let's not lean away or run away or wait for things to get better or wait for things to stabilize or wait for there to be a new pastor. Let's open ourselves together to the uncertainty and know that God will meet us there in it. Last point is that struggle is sacred, but struggle that is that tenacious, intimate dance is the sacred kind. No violence, none of that. Life-giving, intimate struggle. That's what's sacred. And so let's do that together too. For yourselves and your relationship with God, don't be afraid to struggle. In your identity, in your names, don't be afraid to struggle. But also us as a church. Let's not be afraid to not be sure what First Baptist Church means right now. Let's not be afraid to wonder what it might mean in the future. Let's struggle with it and know that that dance together is sacred. Amen.